Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Back when JonBenet Ramsey was murdered, we had been on the air in Denver for about 5 years. We had been covering the significant Colorado news stories, well, the Columbine Massacre, for example, somewhat closely. And if you recall with the JonBenet murder case, FBI agents working on the Ramsey case observed that sex offenders never leave ransom notes nor ask for money, and that kidnappers for profit, they don't first molest the child in the home, and they certainly never leave the victim behind. So what we have done is we've produced our report called The Clue That Breaks the Case. Yesterday, Doug McBurney was in studio allowing me to be downtown at the Capitol in Denver with Colorado Right to Life and Personhood Colorado, introducing the 2014 Brady Amendment, which is a personhood amendment based on a fetal homicide bill that was struck down yesterday by the Democrats. But this is a true personhood bill, just worded somewhat differently. I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot about that. And so Doug announced that on Sunday, just January 27, 2013, the day before he was on the air, it was reported that, in fact, the grand jury in Boulder, 1999, voted to indict John and Patsy Ramsey for child abuse leading to death. And it was the district attorney at the time, Alex Hunter, who was very close to the Ramseys and in an ongoing feud with the investigators, with the detectives. Alex Hunter really pulled a fast one on the public and the media, announcing that the grand jury investigation had completed its time. And then if you have seen his statement since then, he said, "I and my prosecution task force believe we do not have sufficient evidence to warrant a filing of charges." And that was it, October 1999. No one thought to challenge him and say, well, how did the grand jury vote? Everybody assumed they did not vote to bring charges. And in fact, they did vote to indict John and Patsy Ramsey. And so Doug mentioned on the show yesterday that here at Bob Enyart Live, we have our theory of the case. And so I'd like to share that with you. You know, we call it the clue that breaks the case. There are interesting observations of the evidence in this matter. Boulder Detective Linda Arndt, the only police officer on the scene in the hours prior to the discovery of JonBenet's body at 1:05 in the afternoon, says that the Ramseys did not spend those morning hours in each other's company, that John Ramsey stayed mostly in his den and read his mail in the kitchen. He owned a large company. And when she asked who might be responsible for the crime, they both immediately gave answers. John named one of his employees, and Patsy Ramsey named one of their housekeepers. God forbid, but if one of your kids were killed, would you just count right off the top of your head, well, so-and-so works with me, it could have been him, or it might have been the gal that cleans the homes on Thursdays. And so Linda Arndt says she was confused about why the Ramseys would not speak to her. And of course, later they refused a formal interview and polygraph test. And Detective Arndt says that the ransom note deadline of 10 a.m., the ransom note said, be ready, we're going to call at 10 a.m., that the deadline passed unnoticed. Neither John nor Patsy were waiting for the call. She was. The ransom note said they're going to call at 10, and she observed that nobody cared what time it was, and 10 o'clock came and went, and nobody, normally you would think that parents would be desperately waiting until 10 o'clock and ask the detective, what's going on? Why didn't they call? What do we got to do? But the time, the deadline passed unnoticed, and she recalled that the Ramseys did not remark whatsoever regarding that fact, that the kidnapper had not called. So what I'd like to do now is to go through our report point by point. It is online at shadowgov.com. You know our radio show? We're at kgov.com. Well, we also run a site called shadowgov.com. And there, one of the tabs is the Ramsey murder. There's the Columbine Massacre, Michael Jackson, the 9/11 attack, Clinton rapist, execute Scott Peterson, and focus on the strategy. Those are the seven topics, tabs, that make up shadowgov.com. Well, the one on the Ramsey murder is titled The Clue That Breaks the Case. And so back in October 1999, our efforts to present to the public the evidence that John and Patsy Ramsey were guilty, of course, we failed at the time. Now, perhaps the case will be reopened and John should be tried. Patsy Ramsey, she died, which means she went right into the arms of the judge, the hands. She went right into the hands of the judge of the whole earth. So she didn't get away with it. She might have thought she was getting away with it. But our efforts toward justice for John Bonet landed photos in USA Today, the Denver Rocky Mountain News. We were there in Boulder with our specially designed placards, posters. In the Rocky Mountain News, reporting on Fox News shows, a video clip on CBS with Dan Rather. But we failed in our effort. But still, we submit to you now the clue that breaks the case. Some evidence in the JonBenet Ramsey murder points toward her parents, and other evidence seems to point away from them. If the whole truth could be discerned, it would explain every piece of evidence, because real events produce every bit of the crime scene. Sometimes a single key opens many doors, and one piece pulls the puzzle together. JonBenet's murderer inadvertently put the key piece of evidence into the ransom note. Go back to Christmas night, 1996, at 755 15th Street in Boulder, Colorado, in the mansion of her parents, John and Patricia Ramsey. JonBenet was murdered. Death resulted from a severe blow to the head that fractured her skull across the length of her head, and by strangulation with a cord tightened with a broken stick around her neck. The six-year-old girl had also been, apparently, vaginally assaulted prior to her death. Now, there's some conflicting information about whether or not she was sexually assaulted, but she did appear to have injuries consistent with sexual assault. Consider the following observations, and if any of this could be shown to be false, and now we don't have special access to the case file, so if any of this is shown to be false, we will update our case report. But Patsy Ramsey called 911 at 5:52 a.m. on December 26th, before 6 a.m., telling police that her daughter was missing and that she had found a ransom note. Now, the Boulder police, the way they handled this is just bizarre. Sending Linda Arndt, and that's it, for hours. Hours and hours and hours. That's a Twilight Zone version of the story. But that was at 5:52. At 5:55 a.m., 3 minutes later, neighbors Fleet and Priscilla White are called to the Ramsey home along with other friends. So this is a crime scene, but the neighbors and friends are called by the parents to come to the house. Here are excerpts from the three-page ransom note. It's a long ransom note. Now, the ransom note was written in the house, and there was first the draft written and then the note. The pad it was written on was found. So here are some excerpts. Mr. Ramsey, listen carefully. We are a group of individuals that represent a small foreign faction. All right, now, as I read this, some of it will be hard to believe, right? Especially if you haven't heard this news in some time. But, you know, no group calls themselves a small foreign faction. I mean, some American who reads a lot of, like, spy novels might refer to some other group as a small foreign faction, but they don't refer to themselves. Islamic Jihad, for example, wouldn't refer to themselves as, we are a small foreign faction. Anyway, it's all whacked out, and everybody realizes it's whacked out, but what we'll show is the whacked out aspect of it tells us that the Ramseys killed their daughter. So, Mr. Ramsey, we are a small foreign faction. We respect your business, but not the country that it serves. Now, how's that? How many ransom notes start out by complimenting the business of the man whose daughter they just kidnapped? How often does that happen? We respect your business, but not the country. He was a defense contractor. At this time, we have your daughter in our possession. And if you notice, the ransom note will never use JonBenet's name. That was a bit too personal for Patsy to write her daughter's name after they just killed her. At this time, we have your daughter in our possession. She is safe and unharmed. And if you want her to see 1997, you will withdraw $118,000. So you'll withdraw that. Which, by the way, is the amount of John Ramsey's bonus that year for Christmas bonus. I will call you between 8 and 10 a.m. tomorrow to instruct you on delivery. The delivery will be exhausting, so I advise you to be rested. And I think that, by the way, is the clue that breaks the case. We'll get back to that. But this is written, what, ostensibly by an intruder at 1 o'clock in the morning, and they're asleep. And so she's advising sleeping people, the alleged intruder is advising sleeping people to be well-rested by 8 o'clock in the morning. I mean, it's just, but we'll notice why the Ramseys would write that to give themselves an alibi. Why they would have a motive to write that, whereas no one else in the world would ever even think of such a thing to advise sleeping people to be well-rested by the time they wake up in the morning and read the ransom note. If we monitor you getting the money early, we might call you early to arrange an earlier delivery of the money, and hence an earlier pickup of your daughter. There's a reason for that, too. Any deviation of my instructions will result in the immediate execution of your daughter. You can try to deceive us, but be warned, we are familiar with law enforcement countermeasures. Don't try to grow a brain, John. And Patsy wrote this, by the way. Don't underestimate us, John. Use that good Southern common sense of yours. It's up to you now, John. Victory, SBTC. And John attended the Subic Bay Training Center years earlier. But anyway, okay, now notice the note's time element indicates it was composed around midnight. At this time, we have your daughter. I will call you by 10 a.m. tomorrow. So it was sometime around midnight, a bit after midnight, but whoever wrote of it was still thinking of it as the day before. Consider the phrase, I advise you to be rested. Now, a kidnapper would not normally give such advice to his victims, and no one urges sleeping people to get rest for tomorrow morning. It just doesn't fit, but we'll figure that out. The ransom note refers to JonBenet 14 times in the three short pages like memo, notepad, but never by name. The note states, if you want her to see 1997, avoiding the personal, if you ever want to see JonBenet again, or if you want to see JonBenet alive, it avoids that because it's just difficult. Whereas A kidnapper would want to pull on those emotional heartstrings and use the girl's name. The letter, abnormally long for a ransom note, demands a relatively small ransom, exactly equal to Mr. Ramsey's annual bonus. It was back in 1968 and 69 that the Navy stationed Ramsey at the SBTC, Subic Bay Training Center. You know, when you're in emotional turmoil and you're making up a complicated lie and you're just making up initials, you just make up things come to your mind that you don't necessarily think, you know, but it's just SBTC. It's a small foreign faction. Detectives found an entire draft. Now, I don't think it was entire. I think we need to correct this on our clue that breaks the case. Detectives found a draft of the ransom note in the home, and the legal pad on which the final ransom had been written, along with Ramsey handwriting samples that were similar to the style on the note, they going through the home. A broken window had an obviously disturbed sill under it, and under that, police found a scuff mark, and below that, a piece of broken glass on the basement floor. However, police find no footprints outside the window. It had snowed that night. Just hours before the murder, it had snowed. The police made no footprints there. So why would the windowsill be disturbed if there's nobody came in from the outside? That's the thought. There were no signs of forced entry. The alarm system had not been activated. Four people were known to be in the house that night: JonBenet, her 9-year-old brother Burke, and their parents. The Boulder police have no evidence pointing to Burke and have never considered him a suspect. Detective Linda Arndt, the only police officer on the scene in the hours prior to the discovery of the body at 1:05 in the afternoon, remembers Mr. Ramsey's demeanor when he initially greeted her as not distraught nor even upset, but cordial. Now, people, it's hard to say how people will respond in crisis. People respond in all different kinds of ways. And you can't say, well, look how they behave weirdly, so they must be guilty, because people do behave weirdly under stress. But you do take that in as a factor. Linda Arndt behaves weirdly. If you see her interviewed, I mean, this case has turned her inside out as a human being. So she has a hard time talking about this case. But John Ramsey didn't seem to be distraught, not even upset, just went through his mail like you'd go through your mail or your Facebook or whatever. Arndt says that the Ramseys did not spend those morning hours in each other's company. Now, that's difficult to comprehend. Even people who are divorced, like after Columbine, the divorced parents immediately came to each other to find out what happened to their child and to grieve. And with the, you know, new spouses in tow. So when your daughter is kidnapped and you're not in each other's company, that's some indication that there's something about this that causes you not to want to be with one another. Patsy stayed in the sunroom with friends, and John stayed mostly in his den and read his mail in the kitchen. When they were asked who might be responsible, John gave the name of an employee, Patsy the name of a housekeeper. That's convenient, right? Like I'd say, well, probably Wally. It's just it shows people who are guilty who want to deflect attention elsewhere. Linda Arndt, the detective, says that at 10 a.m., the ransom note deadline, that it passed unnoticed, that the Ramseys did not remark whatsoever regarding the fact that the kidnapper had not called. Arndt says that she asked the Ramseys and their friends to examine the ransom note for clues, and that almost everyone offered ideas to her except Mr. Ramsey. You know, the Boulder Police Department, they've just eviscerated Linda Arndt for her terrible, unprofessional conduct. She was left in a nightmare for hours. Hours and hours and hours alone. She called repeatedly. Nope. Hey, it's the day after Christmas. Everybody's on vacation. She can't get anybody there until finally they find the body, and she calls and she says, it's no longer a missing child. Now it's a murder scene. So Arndt says that when she was first confused about why the Ramseys would not speak to her, later they refused a formal interview and refused to take polygraph tests, and it started to make more sense. She suggested that John Ramsey search his home, and he and Fleet White came upon the corpse in the basement, and Ramsey ripped the duct tape from his daughter's mouth and picked up her body, 47 inches long, 45 pounds. It was a circuitous route to the wine cellar where the body was found. It'd be very difficult to navigate by a stranger, especially at night, especially with a struggling child, especially without waking anyone, especially when the staircase light switch is not where light switches are on the wall, but up above and behind someone entering the stairs. Like, you'd have to know where it is. Arndt saw Ramsey carrying the body from the basement and JonBenet's unsupported arms extended above her head, and she realized that rigor mortis had set in and that she had been dead for some time. It takes about 6 to 12 hours for that. There was also the scent of decomposition. At 1:30 in the afternoon, a detective overheard John Ramsey talking by phone to his pilot and arranging a trip to Atlanta that evening for himself, his wife, and son. So Detective Sergeant Larry Mason said, you can't leave. Now, Atlanta might be your home, but your daughter was just found dead. And you're going to leave that night? The coroner, Dr. John Meyer, found evidence of sexual assault from the previous night, a small abrasion and small amounts of blood in both her underwear and vagina. Three medical experts consulting for the police say that the injuries were consistent with prior sexual abuse. A black light helped reveal that her body had been wiped clean, but that a residue of blood was left on her thighs. John Ramsey says that he had carried a sleeping JonBenet from the car straight to her bed that night. The coroner found something in her stomach which may represent fragment of pineapple. The party she attended that night had served no pineapple, but police found a bowl of pineapple on the Ramseys' dining room table. So that's an indication that even the story of how they got home the night before was a lie. The murderer draped one of JonBenet's blankets around her body. That blanket held a pubic hair that was not linked to any family member. One pubic hair. We're going to get to that, and we'll see how that ties into I advise you to be well rested. We'll put that all together. Unidentifiable DNA material was beneath her fingernails. An unidentifiable palm print of unknown age was on the wine cellar door. The panties on her body were too large for JonBenet and contained a stain that DNA could not link to any house member. When Patsy saw her daughter dead, she exclaimed that she had never before seen the underwear on her daughter's corpse. Where did that underwear come from? We've never seen that underwear, and it was obviously too large for her daughter. Well, you know where that underwear came from? The detectives later found the receipt from Bloomingdale's in New York, where Patsy Ramsey purchased that pair of underwear as a gift for her 12-year-old niece. But friends of the family knew the story of that pair of underwear, and they told the detectives that when JonBenet saw the pretty underwear, personally, I can't imagine buying underwear for somebody as a gift, but when JonBenet saw how pretty it was, she threw a tantrum. She wanted that underwear for herself, even though it didn't fit. So Patsy kept it for her. Prior to the murder, friends of the family knew the underwear story, and Patsy put it in JonBenet's closet up on a shelf so that when she got older, she'd have it. If Patsy did recognize the distinctive underwear and was lying, then she was trying to point the police to exculpatory evidence, which she knew had been planted in the underwear. So where did that exculpatory evidence come from? I advise you to be well rested. You have to be well rested just to get all the details of the case. We're about out of time, and we'll conclude this part two in the conclusion tomorrow, Lord willing. But Officer Barry Harkop interviewed next door neighbors and reported that Scott Gibbons saw strange lights and movements coming from the kitchen area around midnight. And neighbor Melody Stanton awoke her husband around midnight after hearing a scream, and he stated that he heard the sound of metal clashing against cement. The Ramseys say they heard none of this. They were in the house. These are their neighbors. Police found a Ramsey family flashlight on the kitchen counter, and it was not normally kept on that counter. It was, you know, a family flashlight kept nearby, but not there in the kitchen on the counter. So we will conclude this tomorrow, and you'll perhaps want to email these programs to others. Go to kgov.com. You'll see kgov.com/the clue that breaks the case. And as with we've done with so many things, we believe that when you take a biblical worldview and you understand the principles of justice and of criminal justice as God reveals in the scriptures, then you're able to think more clearly about current events and especially crime. That's why we offer at Bob and Yurt Live, we offer a DVD, God and the Death Penalty, New Testament Support for Capital Punishment, and an entire seminar on an MP3 CD, God's Criminal Justice System. We strongly urge you to listen and enjoy both of those. You'll learn so much about God, so much about the scriptures, so much about the principles of criminal justice. You'll understand why Doug McBurney and I went to Hollywood to purchase O.J. Simpson's memorabilia at auction and why we burned them on the steps of the L.A. courthouse the next day at noon. You'll understand. You'll understand why Court TV had us on to talk about the death penalty for Scott Peterson, why there are federal judges and prosecutors and sheriff's deputies around this country who tune into this show to look for justice. God bless you guys.